An Ash Wednesday sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 25, 1998, entitled Dust to Dust Plus. The texts for the sermon are Ecclesiastes 3 and 1 Corinthians 15, verses 35 through 58. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
For everything there is a season, writes the Old Testament poet, and we are entering into a season. The Old Testament writer was speaking about the multitude of human experiences, all of which are somehow encompassed in the spectrum of our living. But tonight we are entering into a season that has been structured by the ancient church. It's a season called Lent. It comes from the idea of the lengthening of days and therefore the movement towards spring. And the Lenten season is inaugurated in this day, Ash Wednesday. It is a season that we have constructed. It is a religious season created by those who, I believe, in wisdom understood the importance of times and seasons with special themes, special areas of focus that could bring us into the various moods, raise questions, cause us to contemplate those critical moments and passages of our lives. There's no divine revelation that says there should be 40 days of Lent, nor is there any word from the Lord that says there should be Ash Wednesday or the imposition of ashes. But I find it an increasingly meaningful experience, understanding full well that it is something that we in the Christian tradition have put together. It's an ancient tradition. There was an article in, I believe, the Detroit Free Press today about the observance of Ash Wednesday and its origins in the Catholic Church. And then there were some quotations from Protestant pastors. I've had enough experience with the press not to hold it against this dear woman, but there was a Methodist pastor who was quoted as saying, well, some congregations hesitate to offer this ritual because it reminds one of one's mortality. And who wants to be reminded of one's mortality when spring flowers are about to erupt? Isn't that awful? Now, I suspect that the dear lady said that in the context of explaining how and why they did it in her congregation. But the comment itself is reflective of a very, very superficial and, I think, very miserable human response to the contemplation of our mortality. If not for God's sake, then for our sake, it is important that we have this moment in which we are addressed concretely and through ritual action hear the words, dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return. For I really believe that we cannot live fully, freely, humanly, until we have come to terms with our mortality. And so what a marvelous ritual this is. What a good day this is. What a moment freighted with eternity is this hour of worship. To be reminded, to be confronted with the fact, I shall die. And the fact that I shall die is not a negative. It is a positive, because it is in the appropriation of that reality that I am set free, fully to live, and to enjoy the gift of life, and to wonder at that very gift. We live in what is called the postmodern world. It is that period of time after the modern period, and the modern period is the period in which human rationality reached its apex, and there has been a struggle between reason and faith. And in the modern period, the Enlightenment, post-Enlightenment period, reason, scientific verification, all of that has, as an acid, eaten into the easy assumptions of faith. And so there are many of our contemporaries who believe that to die is all there is. Perhaps as articulate a voice of that modern mentality as any is the British thinker Sir Bertrand Russell, a very acute mind. And in his book, A Free Man's Worship, he wrote these words. It's a rather compact paragraph, but I think you can follow it. That man is the product of causes which had no prevision of the end they were achieving. That his origin, his growth, his hopes and fears, his loves and his beliefs are but the outcome of accidental collocations of atoms. That no fire, no heroism, no intensity of thought and feeling can preserve an individual life beyond the grave. That all the labors of the ages, all the devotion, all the inspiration, all the noonday brightness of human genius are destined to extinction in the vast death of the solar system, and that the whole temple of man's achievement must inevitably be buried beneath the debris of a universe in ruins. All these things, if not quite beyond dispute, are yet so nearly certain that no philosophy that rejects them can hope to stand. Only within the scaffolding of these truths, only on the firm foundation of unyielding despair, can the soul's habitation henceforth be safely built. Bertrand Russell is no fool. Bertrand Russell is a brilliant human intellect who has examined the human scene, probed the depths of philosophy, heard the arguments of religion, observed human experience, and has said, there's nothing more. And he has articulated for many of our contemporaries the conviction that we are born and we die, and we are simply an accident which didn't have to happen, And when it's over, we'll leave no trace. That's a possibility, you know. It cannot be proved, nor can it be disproved. It is Bertrand Russell's faith. The writer Somerset Maugham, in his short story of Human Bondage, has a character named Philip. And so in literature, we have the reflection of Bertrand Russell's philosophical statement. Philip asked himself desperately, what was the use of living at all? It all seemed inane. The effort was so incommensurate with the result. Pain and disease and unhappiness weighed down the scale so heavily. What did it all mean? The rain fell alike upon the just and upon the unjust. And for nothing was there a why or a wherefore. Suddenly the answer occurred to him. The answer was obvious. Life has no meaning. On the earth, satellite of a star speeding through space, living things have arisen under the influence of conditions which were part of the planet's history. And as there had been a beginning of life upon it, so under the influence of other conditions, there would be an end. Man, no more significant than other forms of life. And come not as the climax of creation, but as a physical reaction to the environment. There was no meaning in life, and man by living served no end. It was immaterial whether he was born or not born, whether he lived or ceased to live. Life was insignificant and death without consequence. Well, those statements from modern writers and our contemporaries could be multiplied endlessly. And we in the church have often not faced up to the enigma of our human existence. And we have not often faced up to the fact that what we affirm to the contrary is a declaration of our faith. It is not the consequence of some deep intellectual investigation, thereby bringing verification. But to be human is to wrestle with a question. I do believe that. Quite a miracle to be human. We are able to think outside of our skin. We're able to face that question, is this all or is there something more? We think about it, some of us more than others, but most of us at some time or other. Is this all there is or is there something more? The Old Testament writer, the writer of Ecclesiastes, was quite other than a Bertrand Russell or a Somerset Maugham. There was no question in his mind about God and God's structuring of the whole of reality and of human life. And for everything, there was a season. And there was a kind of orderliness to the human experience. But he also recognized that being human is to live with an enigma, with a mystery. He says God has put in the human heart a sense of time past and present. Or another translation has it, God has put into the human heart a sense of eternity. But he cannot discover what God has been about from the beginning to the end. And Israel's ancient faith, you know, had very little to say about life beyond death. To experience the living God in the midst of this life was the strong center of the tradition of Israel. And indeed, I like the writer of Ecclesiastes. He's got a kind of healthy, wholesome adjustment to life. He doesn't miss the joy of labor and of fellowship and of wine. And he encourages people who live with that enigma and with that mystery that he says cannot be solved. He encourages them nonetheless to live. Live now. Live fully. Life is God's gift. What if this is all there is? Will you miss the wonder and the awe of it just because you don't know what is beyond the veil? The writer of Ecclesiastes says, no, do your labor. Enjoy your work. Eat your bread. Drink your wine. Live. It's a good corrective to much Christian tradition that has either directly or indirectly suggested that real life is for another time and another place. Some of us have been conditioned in a tradition whereby it almost seemed as though we had to put up with this present life in order to get to the real thing. And that's a travesty. That's a denigration of present human experience. And it's wrong. This life, here and now, enjoy your labor, eat your bread, drink your wine, live now. But the Christian tradition has said something more. St. Paul had been encountered by the living Christ, the crucified one, whom he was certain had addressed him, not concretely in that old physical form, but in vision through a blinding light. The point was that this one who had died was a living presence who addressed him. And Paul believed, therefore, in the resurrection. Paul didn't believe in resurrection because Jesus had come back from the dead. Paul believed in resurrection because he was a Pharisee. And toward the last couple of centuries before Jesus, into Judaism had come a belief in resurrection. The Pharisees believed in a general resurrection in the end, so that Paul was prepared for this encounter, this vision, and when he had it, he, as others who had been thus encountered by this crucified living one, called it resurrection. Paul didn't know what time it was on God's calendar. Paul had it wrong, as a matter of fact. But this he concluded, that the one who was crucified lived, and that was a pattern and a model for all humankind. For Paul recognized that this flesh and blood, vulnerable and subject to decay and death, cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven. But there is some kind of transformative process, Paul believes. The analogy of the seed, which is really a beautiful analogy, the seed planted in the soil, we'll be doing it soon. If we were to dig it up and see it in mid-process, we would find that the seed actually disintegrates. And yet, miracle of miracles, out of that disintegrating seed comes forth the new plant, bearer of many more seeds. And so Paul, he didn't know what time it was on God's calendar. He actually suspected some things and he was wrong. That doesn't bother me a bit. What he had experienced was one alive who had moved through death, and he saw that as a paradigm for all the rest. Thus, he speaks of a mystery. The writer of Ecclesiastes spoke of a mystery too. And he says, you can't figure it out. It's an enigma. You live with the enigma. So live with the enigma. But Paul says, live. Labor, inasmuch as you know that your labor is not empty, your life is not meaningless, what you're about, what you give yourself to, doesn't just go up in smoke. That's the way he concludes this chapter in which he affirms that there is something more. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, inasmuch as you know that in the Lord your labor is not empty. Your life is not meaningless. I don't think there are many people who can find real meaning in life, in this life, believing that this life is all there is. I think the intuition of the Old Testament writer was true. God has put something in our hearts that has a sense of something more. And Paul's meeting with the living Christ was his experience that enabled him to be a proclaimer of good news, that this is not all there is. My meditation subject this evening is a very humble statement. Dust to dust plus. Probably based on Hans Kung's statement in answer to his question, which is published in a series of lectures published, Eternal Life? Question mark? Eternal Life? Question mark? In which he says, not less, but more. I have no idea what shape or form it will take. I believe that this life is to be lived fully, appreciated, wondered at, filled with awe. But I do believe there's a plus. And so tonight you receive the ashes. Let it be a moment of contemplation for you. You will hear the words, dust thou art, to dust thou shalt return. Dear friends, you will die. Your life here has a terminus point. So live it well while it is the gift to possess. But live in hope as well. Live in the possibility of the plus, a surplus of meaning, and a transformation that will bring us into light eternal. Dust to dust, plus.